This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Khoo Sitchong. With me, Joyce Goh. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that takes you behind the headlines of the day with the members of the press corps. Now, joining us on the show today, we've got Leslie Lau. He's the managing editor of Malay Mail. And welcome, Leslie. Now, last week, Prime Minister Tun Mahathir was in China for a five-day official visit. You were there.
Yes,
and he was visiting the Chinese Premier, Li Keqiang, on an invitation, five-day visit. It's special because Dr. Mahathir was returning to China as PM after a 17-year hiatus. Last he was there was for APEC. What was your take on the trip in terms of its significance? What was your sense of the mood on the ground?
I think at the end of the trip, for 5 days, the Chinese rolled out the red carpet for Dr. Mahathir. There was no doubt about it. The private sector, the Chinese private sector, Jack Ma himself, was particularly welcoming to Dr. M. And throughout the trip, it was smooth. And despite whatever some people back in KL said, there were a lot of conspiracy theories. Everything went as well as it could, I think.
Yeah, Leslie, because I think there are a number of people saying that, you know, they concluded that, you know, Tun M's trip was a failure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of jeopardized the whole relationship, China-Malaysian relationship. What's your take on that?
I think there were a lot of expectations surrounding this trip. After all, the backdrop of the trip was ECRL, the two pipeline projects, also rumours that Jolo was in China. Yeah, I think there were people actually expected Mahathir or the Chinese to actually make an announcement to say a conclusive announcement about ECRL, and also that some people were even saying maybe the Chinese would present Jolo to Dr. Mahathir if he was indeed there. Okay, this is never going to happen.
I think it was quite well settled by now that the trip was not about getting, you know, hard decisions on various projects. It was more of a diplomacy journey, right? And knowing what we know about how the Chinese are all about the face, you know, going on previous press junkets where obviously diplomacy and face are very much de rigueur, did you get the sense that China did really present its best foot forward in terms of, you know, showing to the world that relations with Malaysia are still very cordial?
I think they did. Besides meeting Li Keqiang, the Chinese premier, Mahathir was also given a state dinner by a banquet by Xi Jinping, the president of China, which is, I'm told, is only given to very, very important guests. Mm. Usually, I'm told that usually only Li Keqiang would host the dinner. Okay, that in itself tells you something.
What about in terms of the business delegation, apart from Jack Ma and Alibaba, who are the, you know, affected parties or otherwise of the whole postponement agenda were present?
Well, what was actually quite interesting was on the ground, especially in the hotel where Dr. Mahathir stayed, there were a lot of businessmen and representatives, Malaysian representatives of Chinese companies who were involved in they told me they were involved in the projects involving China in Malaysia. Mm. Okay, obviously, they were all jostling to maybe speak to Dr. Mahathir or speak to some of the ministers present also to get a sense of what was really, really happening. I think that was it was pretty difficult for them to get a sense, actually, because Dr. Mahathir was actually really, really busy. His program was packed He didn't have that much time, but he had dialogues with the Chinese businessmen as well as Malaysian businessmen.
Mm. Leslie, earlier you said that, you know, there were a lot of expectations to this trip. And do you feel that the expectations were met and objectives achieved? And you also mentioned that there are conspiracy theories. What kind of conspiracy theories were you referring to?
Well, you see, I think what was important was that Dr. Mahathir went there and projected Malaysia. Look, I'm not a spokesman of Dr. Mahathir.
Yeah, but you were on the
impression
at the
is
trip.
That Dr. M went there and projected an image of Malaysia as an equal to China, okay? Which will be quite different from the previous administration, if you like, okay? So that was the most, I think that was the objective that was met there, okay?
Yeah, Leslie, you know, it's not doubting that, because when you analyse it, you know, we spoke to Country Garden, the building for a city in off Johor Bahru. Malaysia is the biggest overseas market footprint anywhere around the world. And we also know that in terms of the overseas Chinese diaspora, Malaysia is the biggest, if not one of the top three in the world, in terms of having overseas Chinese. You know, I'm sure a lot of discussions between you and the local delegation took place. Some of the most interesting conversations I know happened over dinner, after drinks, at the bar, for example, in between official gatherings. You know, I'm sure you talked to business people, politicals, and various panjandrums as well. What was the mood? What was some of the conversations that took place between you and them?
I think there's a lot of certain level of uncertainty, as is expected. Most people cannot seem to predict Dr. M. They want a certain outcome. Of course, if their particular business is in a particular field, they will want a certain outcome that would be positive to them. That was not going to be forthcoming. That was not ever going to come across.
Not this trip,
yeah. And as Dr. M, I think he said in his press conference that that is to be worked out by officials. And finally, you mentioned Country Garden. I think one of the things that Dr. M made very, very clear was that FDI did not include building houses. He said Malaysians could build houses as well. We don't need China companies to come in develop townships.
Yeah, earlier you spoke about officials. I mean, in your opinion, how influential do you think have Tun Daim and Robert Kopp been, you know, both members of the Council of Eminent Persons? How have they been in with regards to smoothing relations with China? How influential have they been?
I think the two of them probably laid the groundwork for the trip. Considering Robert Kwok's, being very close to the Chinese government, and Tun Daim's earlier visit, okay, that would have laid the groundwork for Dr. M's visit too. And as Chong said, it's more of a diplomatic trip. Nothing concrete was going to ever be.
Yeah, so I guess this time, first time that the alternative media, quote-unquote, in inverted commas, you guys, Malaysian Insight, of course, other online portals, the larger question is, you know, who were not there, right? And I understand Utusan were not there. Should we read too much into this?
I don't know, because one thing you can look at is that I think it was the first time that Malaysia Kini was invited to be part of a delegation to cover a Malaysian Prime Minister. That showed, and actually, previously, most of the official trips overseas by Prime Ministers would be covered by only a few
official media,
only
right?
selected, few selected ones. Yeah,
this was a really, really huge delegation. There were more than 30 over media representatives from Malaysia, and I think it does reflect some kind of openness on the part of the administration.
But this is in a strange way, ironic way, confer official status, official media status to the previously unofficial, you know, independent media.
Well, actually, you were saying Utusan didn't go, but they were invited, right, Leslie?
I'm not sure whether they were invited. I can't.
We don't know if everybody's invited, but a lot of other media people were there.
Do you guys now see yourselves as official media? Or, you know, what is the editorial stance?
I don't think it's official media as such. You know, you got to look at... I've been a journalist for 25 years, and I've covered Dr. Mahathir from before. Okay, I think he is quite, as most people would have noticed by now, even younger people, he's supremely confident. I don't think he has an issue with any sensitive questions, any sensitive issues. I think he's able to answer most questions. You look at the way the final press conference was held, we all sat on the floor right in front of him.
Sat on the floor?
Yeah, this because he was in the presidential suite.
Okay.
So there were no bodyguards surrounding him. And he was just within 5 feet, within touching
distance. Was he sitting on the floor?
No, he was sitting on a chair. But
Chuang, he is 93.
I don't know, right?
Here's the thing, in any other political leader in the world, you would not have that kind of access.
That's true.
In the previous two prime ministers hardly held press conferences. Okay. They stood on rostrums and took questions from selected media. I think Dr. M doesn't care. I think he knows what he wants to say, which is refreshing, I suppose, for a lot of people.
So you said you covered Dr. M in the past 25 years you've been a journalist. What's your most memorable coverage of him?
Too many, yeah.
But so in this China, you said he had a back-to-back schedule and all that. He still got a lot of energy, a spring in his step?
Oh, yeah. Most of us were very tired. Most of the media was very tired. He seemed to have some kind of energy pack on him.
Yeah, Leslie came back with a cold after the trip.
Yeah,
but not Mahathir. This, of course, is the show Pressing Matters, which takes you behind the headlines of the day with members of the Press Corps. With us today, Leslie Lau, Managing Editor of the Malay Mail. We're going to be coming back after this with the business of online news gathering, BFM 89.9. Good morning. It is 9:47 in the morning, 27th of August, 2018. I'm Khoo Sichong, joined by Joyce Goh. This is Pressing Matters, the show that takes you behind the headlines with members of the Press Corps. With us today, Leslie Lau, Managing Editor of the Malay Mail. Now, intriguingly, Leslie, you are now in charge of the online Malay Mail Online, as well as the newspaper. I think one of the first independent media to have the online offline representation. How has that changed the strategy for yourselves, if at all?
Well, the strategy has changed somewhat because we are digital first, which means operationally we break stories online first, and primarily focus on online. The online sphere as a platform rather than print.
What cuts a breaking story for you? Is it more political, more current affairs, more business? What makes it to the top headline of the day?
Well, whatever is interesting, whatever makes people talk.
Whatever that's new news, right? So looking at Malay Mail, I think it was first published in 1896.
Yep.
And you guys started the Malay Mail online website first. This was how many years ago?
In
2013. So could you walk us through this evolution? Because right now, from print, you all started online, and then after that, now you guys are merged together as one entity.
Well, without going through the entire history of the newspaper, it is the oldest continually published newspaper in Malaysia.
Yeah, the brand.
In terms of editorial balance, I guess, obviously Malay Mail, owned by Redberry. Redberry accused formally of being lenient, I guess friendly to the previous administration. Have things changed? Is there interference from above? How do you cover stories if they are deemed sensitive?
Well, let's put it this way. Just as with most media organizations since May 9, I think when the results were clear on May 9th, everyone went. We had total freedom, and we've had that since. Okay, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it that we were very careful, if you like.
So coming back to this evolution of Malay Mail, how has that changed the group? Do you think May 9 was the changing factor, or even before that, you guys have started your evolution already? And could you share with us, from that change, from going print to online, and then now you guys have merged? Is that making business sense?
I think it's not. Well, yes, it is. It does make business sense, but it's got nothing to do with May 9. I think even if Barisan Nasional had won the election, I think the entire media landscape had been going towards that direction in the first place, because of the fact that the market has changed, not because of any political change.
But the underlying revenue numbers don't seem to be reflecting Malaysia Baru. I understand that, certainly from the last quarterly numbers from all media companies, it's not that great. How's business your side? Are you bucking the trend?
Well, our revenue is improving. It's not to the level that we would like to see it, let's put it this way. And I think it's really, really, well, let's not mince words. It is doom and gloom for the media industry overall. You can ask anyone, whether it's Media Prima, The Star, I think you can see there have been retrenchments.
Mm.
There have been major retrenchments by The Star, by the Media Prima group. You can see what has happened to Utusan. They're PN17 now. There's a reason for it. It's because readers are not buying papers, number one. And there are so many choices.
Will Malay Mail, the newspaper, continue, do you think? Will it break the 100-odd million year trend?
Let's put it this way, we haven't made any official announcements about it yet, but we are definitely scaling down.
There's an examination of the business, right?
Yep.
So, you know, intuitively, digital seems to be the way forward. How do you slice and dice the business? Is advertising the way forward? Are paywalls a thing of the past? What is the business strategy, Leslie, going forward for the digital side?
Actually, I've learned a lot even just in the last 6 months on digital strategy, because we've brought in people to advise us and work on our digital strategy. And there is a lot of things you can do to improve revenue in terms of automated revenue. You talk about all these kind of things, but ultimately it is really, really tough going. Okay.
What's automated revenue? So is it
programmatic? So basically, all your ads. You see, Google provides ads, serves ads
mm-hmm.
to websites, and so on and so forth. Local companies that serve ads. So they're network ads. Okay?
I see.
The whole issue about advertisements as well, shouldn't they not be re-examined in terms of how they appear on your interface? You know, the traditional banners and your contextual ads and your textual links and what have you, they seem to be so analog in a way. Who is re-evaluating the whole issue of online advertising and how they appear?
I think online advertising... It's not really that analog anymore, and it's a little bit more, how do I put it, dynamic. There's a lot more branded content stuff now.
Correct.
Okay, what we used to call advertorials, right?
Mm.
There's a lot more of this push. And what I think the major challenge is that for kind of serious news websites like ours, as compared to some other websites which I won't name right now, they have a very low operational cost. They aggregate stories and they sell ads. So we would need about, say, 50 people to run operations every day. They would need 3, okay? Because they don't go out to cover stories.
They will pick up stories,
just do a little spin to it, which is more exciting, push it out on Facebook. And that's really cost-effective.
Which is ironic, because which business model becomes more attractive to the buyer then, right? The one which has 50 headcount or 3 headcount.
Correct.
Yeah,
but ultimately, who's going to go and gather the news, right?
Yeah, and come up with their own original content or own news break. Speaking about advertising trends, Leslie, obviously that's going into the digital space more than print, the traditional way. How can a media organization monetize that? Because I think a lot of media groups still cannot monetize the digital platform.
I think one of the real challenges in Malaysia is that the corporate sector has actually not caught on fast enough. Okay, a lot of them are still very traditional in their media buy. Okay, so I think a lot of you guys see a lot of CEOs and stuff on your radio station, and a lot of them still like to see their faces in print. Okay.
They like things to have,
they like
change,
to have a profile. Yeah. Okay. So they haven't caught on fast enough yet. Okay. I hope they catch on fast enough for the rest of us to survive.
Yeah. So I guess is this kind of industry, they typically is typified by a lot of consolidation. I mean, The Star booked its terrible set of results, but they've also got about $300 million of cash on their balance sheet to go and buy stuff, right? Obviously, this time, in 10 years' time, there'll be a lot fewer players, a lot larger groups, maybe much more digital in terms of footprint. Are you guys sellers at this point in time? You know, would you consider being sold? Would you flip the tables and become buyers and consolidate yourselves instead?
Well, whether we're sellers or not, that's not for me to say, that's for our owner. But I would like to see us being buyers, actually, to actually pick up more smaller companies.
Yeah, so which ones are interesting to you?
Without
outing them, what kinds of media outlets, what kinds of platforms, what kinds of strategy?
Okay, companies that would be interesting to us would be more lifestyle-based websites. Because
so digital.
Yep. And that's where you get low cost operations, and a lifestyle base. Okay, serious news very expensive.
Why lifestyle? Because cheaper to run. Yeah,
it's cheaper to run, and no matter what you see, if you're running a lot of political and business news, it goes in a cycle.
You want to lighten it up, yeah.
During elections, you get a huge spike, but after that, it comes down again. But throughout the day, most things that excite people is lifestyle. Yeah, that's a constant.
Correct.
Yeah, and Leslie, you've been a journalist for over 2 decades now. How do you see the media industry evolving? Is there still hope, basically? Because you say it's all doom and gloom just now, you know? Advice to young journalists out there.
Well, as John said, there's going to be a lot of consolidation. There aren't a lot of jobs around right now, that's for sure. I think that, optimistically, it looks good in the sense that you're going to weed out lousy journalists and lousy companies, okay? For those of us who are still working for a salary, that's not a very good sign, okay?
So what kind of skill sets, right? Would it be more video presentation? Would it really be more orally driven? Is it, you know, in terms of, opinion editorials? What kind of directions should journalists take?
I think journalists now need to be what they call jack of all. Okay, that's for sure. They need to be take pictures, take videos, and everything. So, and they got to be quick. Okay, in writing stories. No more dilly-dallying.
Times, they are changing. Hey, Leslie, thanks so much for your time. That was Leslie Lau, Managing Editor of the Malay Mail. That was, of course, Pressing Matters, the program that takes you behind the headlines with top members of the Press Corps, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.